Supernatural.
You will not believe what exists beyond. Strange occurrences.
Paranormal.
Join us on a journey to uncover disturbing truths.
Haunted.
Investigating the strange.
Unexplained.
Prepare to explore the paranormal and unknown. Join us as we seek for truth. Welcome to Strange Occurrences. Here now are your hosts, Myron St. John and Joshua Hayes.
Welcome to Strange Occurrences. I'm your host, Myron St. John.
Hey, what's up? Joshua Hayes here.
Episode 16 up now as we explore the mysterious death of Superman, George Reeves.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from another planet.
And strange occurrences as well.
That's right. That started every episode of the legendary TV show in the 1950s, The Adventures of Superman, that starred George Reeves as Superman and Clark Kent. And we're exploring, as I said, the strange occurrences around his death that occurred on June 16th, 1959 at his home, Benedict Canyon, Los Angeles, California.
Beverly Hills.
That's right. It's been the source of speculation and controversy and conspiracy forever.
We're going actually on six decades now.
Yep.
And this thing is still, I don't know, conspiracy, is that the right word? I mean, there's theories, major Hollywood motion picture, Hollywood land. I think that really brought it back in our recent times.
It did. They did a great job. We're going to talk about George Reeves. Josh is going to delve into the history, and then we're going to jump up to the Superman series briefly. But we're going to get to the crux of the matter and talk about what may have happened, what they believe may have happened. Mm-hmm. And then Josh has a theory, but I have been fascinated by this for decades, and I really got deep into it a couple times and had to walk away from it. This last time I got into it, and I had an epiphany on something I think they've overlooked for decades. And I'm not saying I'm the great detective that's going to figure it out, but I've got something I've mentioned to a couple people that gave them the willies, and I may have hit a nail on the head. But we're going to find out what we come up with.
Nice, Myron. What a tease.
Yeah. As we explore what I believe really happened to George Reeves, Superman. So fasten your seatbelts. Hang on. We'll be right back here on Strange Occurrences. All right, now, back at Strange Occurrences with Myron St. John.
Joshua Hayes.
And we hope that you got your cup of coffee or your soda or your tea, and you're ready to delve into a very strange world that was going on back in the 1950s Hollywood. Now, George Reeves was born January 5th, 1914, in Woolstock, Iowa, by the name of George Keeler Brewer. And we know he became George Reeves in Hollywood. I'm going to turn the mics over to Josh as he's going to tell you a little bit more about George Reeves.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and start with more of the earlier life. You already said he was born in 1914. His parents divorced just a few months after his birth, and then shortly after his mom, Helen, she moved George to Pasadena, California, and then she remarried. He graduated from high school, and then he went to Pasadena Junior College. He put all of his attention towards music and acting. He joined the choir. He played guitar, did plays, all that good stuff. 1935, at age 21, he joined one of the most prestigious theaters in Pasadena called the Pasadena Community Playhouse, which is still there. And appeared in dozens of Playhouse productions. So while doing that, he received his big break when scouting agents actually saw him performing at the Playhouse, and a very famous Hollywood producer, David Schlutnick, cast him in Gone with the Wind, of all movies, for his first movies and one of the biggest of all times. He starred as Stuart Tarleton. Smaller role, but that led to a contract with Warner Brothers. So he starts right off the bat in this career, like, here we go. And after Gone with the Wind, he goes on and appears in a succession of less memorable projects, like three or four movies. One of them was he landed a starring role in called So Proudly We Hail.
Yes, I remember.
And then he ended up just going up this, you know, trying to get that career trajectory going forward. But then, bam, the war happens. And he's got to go into the Army and enlists as a special theatrical unit for the U.S. Army Corps, and does like training films and all this stuff. So when he gets out of the Army at the end of the war in 1946, then he returns back to California, wants to get his career going. Just like Elvis and, you know, Jimmy Stewart and all these guys, they come back and can they restart their career where it was? And sadly, in his position, he doesn't. I think this is a first little red flag, like, oh, man. So he really starts trying to do everything he can. He's frustrated and then just has all these dwindling opportunities in films. And then he starts to direct his efforts more towards television work. And television is new at this time. And in 1951, where we're going to start our story and everything that really goes down, he reluctantly accepts the title role in the TV series The Adventures of Superman. And this is in 51. He didn't really even want to do it. And then in the fall of 1952, Superman premieres to the highest ratings and equally impressive critical acclaim with all families and especially children.
Well, there you go. That may have been his niche. Now, he was also in From Here to Eternity. They said they cut him up. I've seen cuts of the movie where he's actually in it, very briefly, small part, and he also actually, before he did Superman, he had a low-budget serial called The Adventures of Sir Galahad, mm-hmm. which just kind of got into that. You know, he hadn't been married before anyway, and divorced in 1950 after he moved to New York. I was doing the Sir Galahad, excuse me, and he came back and, like you said, did the Superman. Now, I believe the first part of that was he made the movie Superman and the Mole Men that triggered the series. And he was excited and, I don't know, a little bit prepared for the onslaught of the Superman mania, because it was. I mean, he made appearances. It was a big deal. And for,
oh yeah,
you know, several years after that, he's a big star. I mean,
Originally, I guess, only wanted to do one season. It was shot in black and white. He wasn't even wearing red and blue.
I know, yeah.
And, you know, they didn't really think much of it. And then Kellogg's, I believe, ended up buying it. And then they brought in Technicolor and they're really turned season two on for the next. They did a total of six seasons, but that's what really propelled them as.
Well, yeah, because he was doing that one commercial where he's eating cornflakes, Kellogg's.
Yeah, oh yeah,
pushing for the kids.
They needed the money to fund the show.
And Kellogg's made the smart move because Superman, it's legendary, that show. I remember watching it. It was a great show. I remember some of the funny stuff that used to go on in that. You know, here's a guy, he gets shot at with the gun.
Yeah.
And then the guy throws the gun at him. He just took the bullets, but he has to duck. I used to laugh at that. Even as a kid, I laughed. And, but yeah, he was a very well-known star. But, you know, he suffered, I think, from the same problem. I used to work with Adam West. He had that same complaint for a while. they get typecast.
Oh, yeah.
And wherever he went, he was Superman. And like Adam used to go, but he was Batman. And somebody says, oh, well, you come in for a role. And they go, oh, we don't want Superman. And then the casting directors are jerks when they think that way. But, you know, after Adam embraced the fact, he goes, okay, I'm Batman. And he really put himself back into and started going places. And then all of a sudden these roles just started appearing. And maybe, I think that's what George Reeves did finally. He started to embrace it, you know, because after they had to run for the show, it went off the air for about 2 years, but it was going to come back. He was like almost perfect for that role. He's like 6'1". He was a big guy, rather athletic. And people loved him. You know, they just, wherever he went. And one of the highest rated appearances he ever did is when he did an I Love Lucy episode.
Right.
People went nuts. Yep. Oh, they just went nuts for that. They loved it, you know. You know, he also toured with the girl that played, I can't remember, I think it was Noelle Neal. They had a little band, a trio, and he played upright doghouse bass, and she sang, and they made a little appearance at some clubs for a while, right at the time that show was ending. He had a big promotional tour coming to Australia and did some other things. But besides all that fun glamour stuff, there's also the turbulence behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one, of course, is that he had a legendary ongoing affair with a Hollywood socialite named Tony Mannix, who was married to Eddie Mannix, big-time executive at MGM, known as the Fixer. However, very strangely, Eddie Mannix didn't care. They used to go out together.
And he had his own girlfriend.
He had his own girlfriend, right? Yeah. And he actually liked George Reeves. They actually hung out together. Very strange. And that went on for a few years.
In which they bought him a house on Benedict Canyon.
Well, Tony Mannix bought him the house.
She did, but it was.
In a car, yeah. Well, you know. And that address, for those of you that ever want to look that up, it's 1579. Benedict Canyon.
Yeah, that's, if you're elite Hollywood, you're a working actor on a famous show, straight in the middle of Beverly Hills, that's it.
That's the place. In that
community. Yeah, Bel Air and all that stuff's right there.
And trust me, folks, Josh knows because he lived there for years out in that area.
Right. Yep, Didn't live in that neighborhood, but I worked in the neighborhood.
You worked in
which would maybe be another episode. I worked at the Playboy Mansion, so that was right in that whole neck of the woods.
That would be a fun episode.
We could talk about strange occurrences for sure.
I bet. Yeah, I know.
No pun intended.
And you were at the Viper Room too. Yeah, but anyway. Then George went to New York on a promotional thing, and he met a New York socialite named Lenore Lemon and became extremely infatuated with her. And anyway, that went back and forth. And then he broke it off with Tony Mannix.
Yep. This is after Superman has completed its sixth season.
Yeah, Superman was. Yep. Yeah, and then he was 1958, I believe it was. He split from Tony Mannix. And then he took up again with Lenore Lemon. And then he announced, relatively quickly after that, he became engaged to Lenore Lemon for about 6 months, and then in 1959. And
Tony's devastated, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, she'd been with him for a long time. And then
Sugar Mama.
Pretty much, yeah. He was the boy toy. And he ended up on that fateful night, June 16th, 1959. That the mysterious death of George Reeves occurred. However, there's many events involved in this. That's the whole matter of this podcast, is to talk about what we believe really happened. But we're going to take a quick pause, come back and say what everyone else has happened. And then we'll dive into what we think happened. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Strange Occurrences.
Folks, thanks for listening. Joshua Hayes here.
In Myron St. John's, we talk about the mysterious death of Superman George Reeves. Now, we've enlightened you with a very brief history. I mean, I've seen some other shows that they go into this long, involved thing, and we've done enough. We want to get to the whole point of this thing. Now, 1959, June 16th, George Reeves is out with his fiancée, Lenore Lemon, and a friend, Robert Condon, a writer, who was staying at the house with him. They do a normal thing. They go out to the nightclubs, have a drink.
Drinks.
Yeah.
were hammered when they got back.
Yeah, they go boozy nights. Right? And boozy nights of drinking. And they go back to the house about 11. And Reeves go to bed. And he comes downstairs. And by that time, it was Condon and Lenore Lemon. And a girl showed up at the house, a friend of hers. Do you remember that name?
Yeah, I think it was a total of five people.
Well, four.
Like an after-hours party.
Four, had started. Four, because a guy showed up, another neighbor showed up named Bill Bliss.
Bill Bliss, okay.
Yeah, right before one, but I can't remember the girl's name.
I have it somewhere, but.
We're going to mention her. We're going to mention her. And he came downstairs and wasn't real pleased because he had enough to drink. He didn't want it. He wanted to go, and they convinced him to stay and have a drink. And he played a guitar, and then he went back upstairs. And a few moments later, they hear a gunshot. And I'm going to throw a word in here, supposedly. And they discover he had expired. It looks like he may have shot himself. And this is where it gets very strange. They wait 45 minutes to call the police. The police show up, and from everything that I've researched, allegedly do one of the shoddiest investigations I've ever seen. And I know you have law enforcement in your background. And they just didn't look for everything. And they interview the witnesses, and the witnesses are still relatively drunk.
They're hammered, yes.
Where they have to take it what it is and say, we'll ask you tomorrow. And they brought the coroner in, and they immediately, without a whole lot of pathology involved, just say, oh, yeah, it was a suicide.
Right.
The sad thing about this is, too, is that when they were going to do the autopsy, for whatever reason, the body had already been embalmed, which takes a lot away some of the forensic evidence. And they didn't check for gunshot residue or on his hands.
Powder or anything, residue,
or
yeah.
Powder around the wound. And they just took it verbatim for what was told. Now, there's scenarios that came out, and there was a movie that came out called Hollywoodland. And in Hollywoodland, that starred Ben Affleck as George Reeves, Diane Lane as Tony Mannix, and Adrian Brody was in it, who was phenomenal as a detective, mm-hmm. a private detective that was hired by George Reeves' mother because she didn't believe the suicide story. They leave you with three possible scenarios. The first scenario is that, yeah, he went up and killed himself.
Suicide, number one.
Number one, that's number one. And his mother didn't buy it, so she hired a famous Hollywood lawyer, I think his name was Geisler. And he had a detective look at that, and they did a second autopsy. I think it's Jerry Geisler, yeah, anyway. And allegedly, the second autopsy was very similar to the first autopsy, except... And it's tough to do a second because they already embalmed him. They had found bruising on the body that was never mentioned that was inconsistent with a guy shooting himself. Anyway, and then all of a sudden he just drops it. He goes, I'm satisfied. He doesn't want anything more to do with it. And that was one of the things that triggered the conspiracy theories. Now, you know, actors like Alan Ladd and Gig Young, and especially a close friend of his at the time, Rory Calhoun, the Western star. They all said the same thing. They said no one in Hollywood bought the suicide story. No one believed it. So that started this whole ball of wax running. So they did Hollywood Land. They said suicide. The second one, or an accidental. The first theory, the second theory they came up with in Hollywood Land is that in the process of a disagreement or so, he is accidentally shot by his then fiancée, Lenore Lemon. That's theory number two. And the third scenario is that Eddie Mannix, Tony Mannix's husband at the time, who adored Tony Mannix and would do anything for her, even though they had this open relationship, known as the Fixer, supposedly had mob connections, had Reeves killed by a hitman. Those are the three scenarios they put out. And that's how the movie ends. It's up to the audience to decide what really happened. Every single one of those is tragic, however it is. However, I don't buy any single one of them. I believe there's something else that occurred that they overlooked. And I know you have a theory that we're going to delve into. So that was the thing. Accidental shooting, suicide, or it was a hit put on by Tony Mannix and Eddie Mannix. We're going to talk about those in depth in a second when we come back on Strange Occurrences. All right, welcome back to Strange Occurrences. Myron St. John.
Joshua Hayes.
The mysterious death of
Mr. George Reeves,
Superman. So, Hollywood Land, they talk about the suicide, and they said that George Reeves committed suicide because he was depressed because of his career, and Lenore Lemon said this. And she made this very odd, strange prediction that he was going upstairs and he's pulling the gun out of the drawer and they hear the gunshot, right?
Her exact words as he's leaving the party for the second time.
Yes.
Or the final time.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets upstairs, he disrobes, he's totally naked. And at the party, she looks to her guests and says he's going to go shoot himself.
Right.
That's what she said. That's what's in the police report.
And it's in the movie, yeah. Now, we're going to get into that in a second as well. So
that's scenario one. A recap. Number two, murdered by the Maddox.
Well, number two is that she goes upstairs with an argument.
Oh, okay.
And they do it in a movie. Now, I don't know. Did he have the gun out or she got the gun out?
Accidental.
And he said, oh, and it actually discharges and shoots him. She says, oh, my God. And so that's how that happens. Because she was known for having a volatile temper. And the third one is Tony Mannix. There was a guy waiting in the house, or a couple of guys, and he went
out
into the room and took him down and killed him and left. Those are the three scenarios that occur, and they keep repeating this over and over and over again. Now, I'm going to debunk these for you. I'm going to debunk all of them. The suicide, I don't believe, occurred because I don't think he was that depressed. Everyone gets depressed, and especially in that, as you already know in your business, used to be an actor. And then a lot of stuff I did, you know, you're sitting there going, oh, God, it didn't work out what we're doing. What are you going to? But I don't think his mother said he wasn't the type, and a lot of people said he just wasn't the type. Of course, no one knows what goes on
correct
for people on that. But I don't think he was, because they were bringing the series back. He had agreed to do it again. When the series ended, he had directed, I thought the last half of it, you said maybe almost the whole season, he directed it.
I think he directed the last season six, yes.
Okay. And he was excited about that. He did a great job.
He wanted to produce and direct. That was his next step in his career that he wanted, or at least try to get film roles.
Right, right. And so they said, well, we want to bring Superman back because there's a big call for it. And he agreed to come back, and he was going to direct and help produce it. So that was a plus.
Right.
He had a movie he was trying to get out, some science, silly science fiction thing that he wanted to use his former Lois Lane, Phyllis Coates, on. And they couldn't get the funding, but it wasn't a dead project. It was still in the mill trying to get out there. And little known by people that I had discovered in my research is that at the time, he had been or was being considered to play the detective in Psycho. Albert Hitchcock's Psycho.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So,
wow.
I mean, he wasn't.
Where did you read that?
Yes.
Okay. That's a first. I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah. And I don't think, true or not, but the Superman thing alone with the appearances and things, I mean, that would, and his return would have been huge because it would have all been in color and he was going to direct and produce, which would have led to other things. So I don't buy that. The accidental shooting, that's plausible. But then again, how does a, he's a pretty big guy. I don't think that an accident like that would just happen. And that goes towards my theory. But I want to jump over to the Mannix thing and debunk that immediately. They had said that he had gotten a bunch of weird phone calls. And he had a couple near misses with accidents. And he even took a restraining order against Tony Mannix because they thought it was her. Now, Eddie Mannix, as a fixer, fixes problems. You know, he had a first wife that died in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy like him is not going to send a hit guy to create a murder. It's just, first of all, it's not in his nature. It would be more of an accident. Second of all, why would you send a hit guy to a house where there's a fiance and another guy living there, and then the hit guy shows up and there happens to be a party going on? He's not going to do that.
The big question, did he still own that house? Or was it in Tony's name?
No, Tony, the Mannix still had it. They had it. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a connection there. A murder happened in your house, dude.
Yeah, but Mannix is not going to want that.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
He's not going to want that heat.
Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't have done it there.
Well, in any professional, not that I know what a hitman would do, but any hit guy is not going to show him, go, oh, it's a freaking party. I'm not going to go kill this guy then. I might get caught. I might be seen. I'd have to kill everybody, you know. And he's not going to wait upstairs. I mean, the weird thing about George Reeves' bedroom is there were no windows in it, so no one's going to sneak in there through a window. You know, I think in the movie they showed that, but in reality, that he didn't have any windows in the room. He liked the dark when he slept, you know. And as far as him being naked, he probably slept in the buff, and he put his robe on it. Well, no, he probably did. He put his robe on. He went downstairs. When he came up, he took his robe.
And they said
it's not really common for suicides to disrobe. They just do it.
Yeah, real quick, let's do a quick pit stop on the crime scene. He was found on the bed, naked, gunshot wound to the head with a bullet in the ceiling.
Correct. Correct.
Yep.
So I don't think the Mannix thing holds water. I don't think the suicide holds water. It's plausible, but I don't think it does because of the angle of the bullet and the body and all that stuff. The accidental shooting is more plausible, but I think there's a lot more to that. So that being said, we're going to get to our theories right now. And I'm going to let Josh run with us, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go to my theory, because my theory, as I've shown you when I wrote it out,
yeah, we got lots of
is quite long.
Research and paperwork.
So Josh Hayes will now give you his theory, what he believes actually happened. The stage, sir, is yours.
Again, I'm speculating.
We both are.
Yeah,
both are.
There is so much on this historic event of this famous movie actor that got murdered. It was real fun doing this type of research on this. And, you know, again, there's thousands of YouTube videos, movies, and books, and For the entertainment sake of our podcast, I'm coming at this just with my own personal opinion, and I'm not saying it's 100% fact. So just that's my little opening statement on it. But I think he committed suicide.
Okay.
Here's why. You have to go back, and I really, since I was a former actor and I lived out there and I dealt with that, I've often called that place the land of broken dreams. It, as an actor, it will suck the life and soul out of your body. And I can see the enormity of how much fame that guy had, but you have to go back again to the very beginning. And it starts off in 1939 with a big bang, no pun intended. And that was not the gun, but that was Gone with the Wind. So he starts off in one of the biggest movies of all time. And he, in his entire life until he died, is chasing to try and get back to that level of fame. He wanted to be the next Clark Gable. How come he did it and I didn't? So he goes and does those like four films. So we got from 1940 to 43. He's slowly working, but not really getting anywhere. The war hits again. His career stops. He's put on hold. Then at 46, he returns to California, and he's desperately trying to get that career on track. And over the next few years, the only film roles he had were super low budget embarrassments. So he's like continually all these years before Superman is beyond frustrated. He has dwindling opportunities in film. He starts putting all of his talent and direction towards wanting to maybe work in TV, trying to get that big break again. So at this point, we're 11 years since Gone with the Wind, and he reluctantly accept that role of Superman in the TV series. He did not want to do that. Thought it was cheesy. I got to wear tights. What's going on with this? And then obviously we know what happens. It explodes into this huge thing. He receives the fame and all that. But what he didn't get was money. He made hardly any money during that 6 years. He was living in Tony Maddox's house. She was a sugar mama. Yes, he was a working actor living the dream to everyone else, but he was really not a wealthy actor. So he shoots the six seasons. He does 104 episodes. Now, these shooting seasons lasted 13 weeks. That's it, each year. So for 6 years, he really worked 13 weeks, which leaves him a lot of time on his hands. So he can't get any work because the number one deal in all of this is he's typecasted. He still wants to get to that Gone with the Wind stage. He wants to be the big actor, and he cannot. So we have all that negative coming back in after Superman. He's depressed. He was a big drinker, possibly an alcoholic. That's been stated. More depression, more rejection. He's trying to become a director and producer. He goes to New York. His relationship's failing with Tony. He gets this new girl, Lenore. Within 6 months, he's engaged to her. She finds out he's real famous but doesn't have any money. He's a loser. He starts getting more depressed. So we're going 2 years after the end of Superman, and he keeps going with all that rejection. He has no money. And I'm saying his Superman fame really cost him. And once he got engaged, she knew his secret that he was famous but didn't have any financial wealth behind him. So his career, his future marriage is not what it's going to be. And I just start to think that no one's going to hire, in his mind, no one's going to hire me because of being typecasted. He's angry. He's depressed. He's fighting with Lenore all the time. And then they go out drinking all night. And they arrive home, and he's drunk. And he goes to bed, and he's pissed. And then he awakes at past midnight, and there's people partying in his home. these bastards, these hanger-oners. And then he goes down there and tells them, you know, to shut up, chill out. And they convince him, hey, man, just relax, having just one more drink, relax. And inside, they don't know the inner turmoil that he's going through. He's depressed. He's drunk, and he wants to end it because he knows, do I have to go back and do another year of Superman? Do I have to go back and do that dreaded TV show? It's been 2 years, and that's the only option I have. The only other option I have is a marriage that's going to go nowhere. And I think he was beyond drunk, went upstairs, said, 45 years I've been on this earth. I'm never going to get to Gone with the Wind. And bang.
Wow. It's a good summation. Very good.
Just my 2 cents.
No, that's fine. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you my summation from Josh's point of view, because we both debunked the Tony Mannix and the Eddie Mannix involvement in that. Mm-hmm.
Just one little caveat to that aspect of it is I want to know who owned that house.
Tony Mannix.
Because I could see an angle where he would be like, that punk left my girl and has hurt my girl. I want him out of my house. So they off him so they can get their house back.
It wasn't Eddie's house. It was Tony's house.
Well, still. But where that house is located.
No, I get it.
Right in the heart of Beverly Hills. That was worth some money. I don't think they were just going to give it to George Reeves.
No, but he wouldn't. Eddie Mannix was slick enough, he wouldn't have pulled it like that. He wouldn't have done it like that. It's not.
I just want to throw that little one in. That could be a motive, but I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. So, hang on, folks. We'll be right back. I'm going to tell you what I believe really happened to George Reeves.
All right.
Okay, welcome back to Strange Occurrences. Your host, Myron St. John.
Hey, folks, Joshua Hayes.
Now that Josh has relieved himself.
I feel much better. I can't wait to hear this tease that you have.
It's going to be, forgive my long-windedness, but I want to get to a point. This is going to be my Sherlockian take on what I believed really did happen. Although you laid out a beautiful case for the one scenario. This is a scenario that happened, but it's not accidental. And I'll just say right off the bat who the shooter and the killer is.
Okay.
It's Lenore Lemon. Right out the gate. She's the one that did it. And let me go over what I think happened. Now, everyone overlooks. Now, at this party, I want you to understand, there was Lenore Lemon, a guy named Robert Condon, who was a writer, was staying at their house.
Yeah.
A friend of hers named Carol Van Winkle lived in the neighborhood. And another guy named Bill Bliss, who was another neighbor, that they all mysteriously showed up sometime after midnight. And I say mysterious because who shows up at somebody's house after midnight after drinking? But I'm going to tell you why. Here's my scenario, what I believe to be true. Now, previous months, it had only been 6 months since he had taken up with the Lenore Lemon and broke off with Tony Mannix. And, you know, there had been a series of things happening with his car. The biggest one is the brake lines were drained.
He got in a pretty bad accident out of that, too.
He did, yeah. He hurt his head, but he was fine. And so they... he filed the complaint against Tony Mannix. That fits more in what Eddie Mannix would have done. Accident.
Mm-hmm.
Not hit. But I don't think any of that occurred. And he would get these threatening phone calls. But then Tony Mannix says she got threatening phone calls. Here's what I believe happened. I think that because of that, or in retaliation for that, I think he was talking with Tony Mannix again. They were very close for years. They shared a lot of they shared these same interests. And like it was her house and everything. And he was friends with her husband, Eddie. You know, they were all buddies. And I think that maybe he realizes Lenore Lemon may have been a mistake.
And he's engaged.
Supposedly. Because the night it happened, they were at a restaurant. And it had been witnessed that he and Lemon got in a pretty good fight outside, argument. Mm-hmm. And it's speculative that they were fighting over him being in contact with Tony Mannix again. And I think, here's just, I'm going to throw some out there. Now, what if Lenore Lemon had known that he had been talking to Tony Mannix? Because he could still couldn't let her go, and she couldn't let him go.
Right.
You know, they said that Tony Mannix came over to a house and took the dog that they both shared. What if she was the one making those phone calls? What if she was the one doing the car stuff to make it look like it was Tony Mannix?
Mm-hmm.
So he would be done with her. And in his conversation, when he got the restraining order against Tony Mannix, she might have called him up or somebody said, "What? Why would you do? Why would you think I did?" And they got in this conversation. And maybe he realized it wasn't her. I'm not saying this is, I'm just speculating. I'm just throwing some things out there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so. But you can't prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's understand Lenore Lemon, she was a big-time socialite in New York City, but she was known for a volatile temper, and she was devious, and she always got what she wanted. In Hollywood, yeah, he wasn't the big money bag, but because of him, she was exposed to all that Hollywood stuff, and she liked it. Now, they get in this fight, and then they go home. And they go to this party, okay? Not like the party comes to them, but here's the thing. Most people don't have to understand. At this party, Carol Van Winkle and Robert Condon, Carol Van Winkle was a friend of hers. Robert Condon was kind of a friend of both of them, more so her.
And it'd be a newer friend too, probably.
Well, they were her friend, not really Reeves' friends.
Oh, okay.
But Robert Condon and Carol Van Winkle were having an affair. She was married to a movie guy. So that's why she was at that house, to be with Robert Condon.
Hmm.
The one part of this that makes no sense is why the hell was this Bill Bliss there? George Reeves didn't really know him at all. He was just a neighbor. And he just shows up with Carol Van Winkle at this house. I think maybe he was a flirtation of Lenore Lemon in retaliation for the Tony Mannix thing. You just don't show up at a guy's house. And anyway, he was there. So when Reeves comes downstairs, it's not Carol Van Winkle and Robert Condon. They're off in a bedroom together, and they're drunk. He comes downstairs, and there's Lenore Lemon and this Bill Bliss guy. So it's just the three of them. So here's what I believe happens. He finishes thing. He's going upstairs, and he probably another little argument occurred. And he says, "What's this guy? Who's this guy? Whatever, you have a couple drinks." And people say stuff when they're drunk, you know. He might have said something to Lenore Lemon and said, "Hey, you know, I'm done with you anyway. You know, have your drinks, whatever, but I'm done. You know, we're not getting married. We're not doing any of this stuff." And he goes upstairs. So she, being a little upset about that, she storms up the stairs after him to continue the argument. Now, Bliss is still downstairs drinking. You know, he's like, "Hey, I'm just sort of here, man," you know.
Yeah.
So she goes upstairs, and the argument continues. And I believe she pulls the gun out of the drawer and starts waving it around because she's drunk, she's crazy, she's really incensed. And they get in a physical fight. And he tries to get the gun away from her. And in doing so, it goes off, not once, but twice, into the floor.
Yeah.
Now, Bliss is downstairs, and he hears those gunshots. And he's drunk, but he's not that drunk. He goes, "Oh, geez," and he goes up the stairs. Reeves, I believe, got the gun away, because he's a big guy. He got the gun away from her. Of course, she's mad and she's angry, and it's kind of tough. So he gets the gun away from her, and she's still maybe punching him or doing whatever it is. And he comes in the room, and he sees Reeves with the gun. He goes, oh, my God. And so Reeves pushes Lemon away, and maybe she falls on the floor or something. And or she pushes him. He falls back on the bed, you know, falls back on the bed. And he gets up, and Bliss goes with the gun, and they get in a physical he tries to intervene, they get in a physical confrontation. In that period, the gun is thrown out of Reeves' hand. And Bliss and him are now physical.
Which were the bruises.
Bruises.
Yeah.
But Reeves, being a bigger guy than Bliss, I think he gets the better of Bliss. And maybe Bliss pushes him, or he knocks Bliss backwards. And in the interim, Reeves falls backwards because he's still drunk a little, but he's about to have his balance. And he plops on the bed for a second, you know, like when you fall backwards, right? Fall backwards. Getting away from Mike. In that interim, I think Lemon grabs the gun. And she brings the gun up.
Because she's on the floor looking up to him.
Yes. And she fires a shot. Maybe not intentionally to shoot, but maybe just to say, okay, this is enough. But she fires the gun. And he's already sitting on the bed. Hits him in the head. Kills him. Which would explain why he falls backwards in the bed. In the position he was in. Now, it's over. She just killed George Reeves. Bliss is in the room and sees the whole thing.
Now what? We got to call the cops. No, we got to figure out what we're going to say.
Exactly. So here's what Lenore Lemon does. She's a clever woman. She's a devious woman. Make no doubt about it. I read some interviews she did years later. She connives things. She knows this is not a manslaughter charge. This is a second-degree murder charge. That means life in prison or death. Bliss, willingly or unwillingly, is an accomplice now. That means prison time for him, too, because he was involved. She says, here's what we got to do. So they wipe the gun down, throws it, they pick up the shell casings, not thinking that there's three shots fired, but just one. I believe the shell casing underneath his body was from one of the first rounds going into the floor. It probably fell on the bed. They didn't realize it. They couldn't find it, but they cleaned it up. They did a cleanup, and they came up with the idea for the story. And I believe he was naked because I think he went up to go to bed, and he took his robe
on. He had a robe on, probably.
And that's and she confronted him up there. So, I mean, they do that in Hollywood land, but it's an accidental. I don't think it was accidental. I mean, I don't think she initially meant to kill him, but the point is a second-degree murder is – in the heat of the moment, crime of passion, whatever you want to call it, that's second-degree murder. It's not manslaughter. It's second-degree murder. Now, they go downstairs and start to clean up. Now, the witnesses all say, oh, there was only one shot. Well, of course, Bliss is now complicit because he's going to agree with her because he doesn't want to go to prison.
What about the couple in the bedroom, though?
They're out. They don't have no clue what happened. They don't have no idea. They're drunk. They're passed out. They were having an affair. They routes them to get him, try to wake him up. And she comes up with this scenario and tries to explain to him. George went upstairs and killed himself. And they're like, oh, you know, because they're drunk, they're groggy, they don't know what's going on. So she makes up the scenario where she probably says, oh, he's going upstairs. He's opening the drawer. He's pulling the gun out. Oh, hear the gunshot? Yeah, he did it. He was telling them that so they would say that's what happened. But when the police interviewed him, they said, well, Lenore said that's what he did. So to cover her track, she said, oh, I was just kidding. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Bliss still has to go along with it. He said he heard the shot and ran upstairs and found him. He still has to go along with it because he's involved. Okay?
Okay.
Now, the police arrive, and it kind of is a shoddy investigation, you know. But, you know, Eddie Mannix being the fixer, and L.A. in those days, you had Mickey Cohn, who ran the L.A. mob, but it was basically an open city. But the real power in Los Angeles at that time was the LAPD. They were tough. They were almost like a mafia on their own, right?
Yeah.
So somebody on that police, or one of the detectives, whoever was there, knew Eddie Mannix, and he said, oh, my God, that's George Reeves. And he probably called Eddie Mannix. He said, Eddie.
Got something big here.
This is what happened.
In your house. In your wife's house.
And Eddie goes, oh, Jesus, I cannot have this scandal. And they go, what happened? He go, and the police, I said, well, it looks like he might have shot himself, but I don't know. There's four other people in the house. Da-da-da. Eddie says, oh. Eddie says, here's what you got to do. Clean it as fast as you can. Leave it as a suicide. And I'll fix whatever needs to be fixed later. So they do. Now, it's 1 o'clock in the morning or it's 1:30 when they call now.
1:30 or 2, they said.
Yeah. Sometime after 2 o'clock in the morning, Tony Mannix calls Phyllis Coates, the original Lois Lane. Crazy hysterics. Almost inconsolable, saying, oh, my God, the boy's dead. They've killed him.
They.
Okay. Phyllis goes, what are you talking about? She knew George was dead. Now, how did she know? Well, she may have heard the phone call at that time in the morning. Maybe they were up drinking themselves. Who knows? But Eddie, realizing he's going to be the one to have to tell her, because if she reads it in the paper. So he probably sat her down and said, Tony, look, George is dead. He was shot and killed. She didn't believe it because she knew George. She knew him for years. And she goes, oh, my God. And when he tried to tell her, the people in the house, and she probably hated Lenore Lemon. And right away, she believed something nefarious occurred. So that's why she made that phone call. Now, the next day, after it's all over, Lemon breaks into the house through the crime scene tape. She gets caught by Reeves' attorney, who was there for the estate thing, and she got $4,000 in traveler's checks.
Correct.
Which is, by today's standards, like 30, 40 grand. Police never found it. She knew where it was. He had already signed all of them for their supposed trip to Spain or Mexico, wherever they were going. And then she leaves for New York. But before she leaves for New York, she hires herself a lawyer, a big-time lawyer in Los Angeles, to answer and forward everything. She leaves. That's not what an innocent person does. One. Two. She knew the reputation of Mannix already. Now, it's suicide's going to stand. That's not why she fled. Not only was she guilty, she knew that eventually Mannix was going to come for her through Tony. They're not going to let that sit. But I believe that Mannix's reach was only so far in L.A., and she was safe in New York City. Plus the fact Mannix became ill and died just like, 3 years later anyway. And so he never got to that point. Bliss made a funny statement to people a little later on that he said, well, Lenore came down the stairs and says, tell him I was here. Tell him I was down here with you. And she was upstairs. But I think Bliss said that to throw everything off of him and just to keep her implicated. He's the key, this Bill Bliss. And I don't think anybody ever approached him or talked to him much after that. But he's the one that really knows what happened. And I think that scenario I just played out is probably close to being right on.
It goes on and on, dude. While you were talking, I thought of another one real quick. She goes up the stairs and follows him up there. They get in a huge heated argument. She's by herself, Bliss, and everyone else is downstairs. They get in a big fight. She shoots him, comes back down, says, I told you guys he was going to he was going to off himself, or her exact words were, he's going to go up and shoot himself. Because she said that as he walked up. But I'm just saying, what if she did follow him up there and then she...
Like I said, she said that to coach the two that weren't in the room, because...
I'm just saying, it's a whole totally new avenue that you can go down.
Yeah,
but... What sucks in this whole thing, all these people are dead, and we're never going to know.
Well, she gave, and Lenore Lemon gave a couple interviews later on, and she says in the interviews, the police report was bull. She said Condon and Van Winkle weren't even there, which they weren't. They were in the bedroom. And then she says, she recants, and she said, oh, yeah, they were in the bedroom. She said that a couple times. And she said her idea was to get Carol Van Winkle out of there because she was having an affair with this Condon guy, and she was married to this other dude. Yeah. They didn't want anybody to know, and she said she had to get everybody out of the house. Well, it didn't happen. No one talks about this Bill Bliss guy, though. He's... Who was it? Why was he even there? He knew Lenore. He didn't really know George Reeves. She was a devious guy. Now, I saw this one thing where this guy came out and said that Tony Mannix, being a Catholic, confessed on her deathbed that they had hired a hit guy, I suppose. And she told this to a priest. And this guy supposedly lived with her for years. Tony Mannix, as a friend and a caretaker, and he supposedly heard the confession and da-da-da-da. Well, first of all, I'm going to say that's bull crap right off the top. Confessions are private between the priest and the person.
Yeah.
No one else is allowed in the room.
Yeah.
It's her and God. The guy was trying to sell a book. I watched a lot of stuff on YouTube, and it's all hokum. You presented a great case for the suicide. I think what I said is probably close to what really, really happened. Because of the angle of the bed. I think he fell back on the bed after the fight. She was on the ground. Bang. That would explain the angle of the bullet. He also had no powder burns on it. They did say that, though. He had no powder burns around the wound, but they didn't check his hand for powder. Because residue. She had the gun.
Yeah.
And that's why they missed the... And in the process of hurrying in the cleanup to get everything in that 45 minutes... they missed the one shell casing because he was laying on it, but that wasn't, you know, if you had that Luger or any gun and you fire it and the shell ejects, it's not going to fall behind the body. It's going to fall somewhere else. Plus the fact he'd have to hold that Luger at a really screwy angle. That's why I don't believe it was suicide. She was very volatile. And I don't think he was going to marry. And for a woman like that, you're dumping me?
Hell hath no fury.
Yes. And, you know, for Tony. But I think that's why she left L.A. She was guilty and she knew it. But she wasn't going to worry about being prosecuted. She was worried about what Mannix was going to do. Because, you know, she knew the reputation of those people. That's what I really believe happened.
Interesting.
Sadly, to George Reeves. You know, and ironically... I don't want to get paranormal, but I saw some people coming out saying, well, somebody bought the house and lives in the house, and they said the weird stuff goes on in that room all the time. I don't know if they're trying to play off. I think, but I see a lot of these, and I think people are trying to play off on this tragedy and do things. But I just want to get to the truth, and I think we've hit the nail on the head to get people think. So the Mannix thing's completely debunked. I think you made a good case for the suicide. I think I made a good case. If it's not accidental shooting, I think it was, but wasn't premeditated, which is why it's second degree murder. I think Lenore Lemon killed him. So
yeah.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So hang on, folks. We're going to wrap this up. We'll be right back on Strange Occurrences. All right, Myron St. John here.
Joshua Hayes.
On Strange Occurrences, as we had discussed the mysterious death of Superman George Reeves. We're wrapping this up. You be the judge, and don't hesitate to tell us what you think. We would ask everyone if you please subscribe if you can. It doesn't cost anything. Email us, strangeoccurrences.net, and let us know your thoughts on what may have happened to George Reeves. We told you what we believe happened. although Josh and I different what we believe happened, either one of those, I think, is an extremely plausible explanation, more so than what has been delved in before. Now, next episode's coming up in the future. We're going to leave those some surprises. We got some very crazy stuff we're going to be doing, some more true crime. And we're going to be talking with a guy that had been in the ghost show business like me. We're going to talk about the crazy world of the ghost shows, magic shows that used to be so popular back in the 1940s and early 50s. It'll be a lot of fun. Until that time, we wish you the following. Have a great and prosperous year ahead. And please stay safe in whatever you decide you want to do. And remember, listen to what we're telling you, because we love to have listeners get back with us and interact with us here on StrangerGrangers.net. So, Myron St. John here.
Joshua Hayes. We'll see you next time.
We'll see you soon.